Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and welcome to another edition of From the Vault. In this edition, we'll explore the historic presidential election of Salvador Allende in Chile in 1970 and the forces that conspired to overthrow his socialist government in 1973. Gabrielle San Roman, producer of KPFK's Uprising program, is a research scholar on our subject today and will act as our guest producer and host. Take it away, Gabrielle.
On September 4, 1970, Chile became the focus of world attention as its democracy returned presidential election results that gave Senator Salvador Allende of the Socialist Party a majority of the votes tallied. The world's longest and thinnest country now had the distinction of having voted in the first freely elected Marxist president in history.
Simón Bolívar Simón, caraqueño americano, el suelo venezolano. Y por todo el tiempo vuela como candela tu voz, como candela que va señalando un rumbo cierto en este suelo cubierto de muertos con dignidad.
The election of Salvador Allende to the presidency was the result of a tremendous social movement of workers, students, activists, artists, professionals, politicians, and intellectuals. Author Antonio Skármeta, famous for his novel The Postman, made into the film El Postino, was teaching literature at a Chilean university during these times and spoke with me about the political climate in the 1960s that made the electoral victory of Salvador Allende's Popular Unity government possible.
In the 60s and the 70s, I was already a writer. I have already gotten some international prizes, and that was my vocation. I just wanted to write. And at the same time, I was a young professor at the university. I was teaching the students literature, Latin American literature. It was a very good time for Latin American literature. It was the time of the boom. So writers like García Márquez, Julio Cortázar, Carlos Fuentes were very loved by the young students, and I had worked with them on this text. Now, when the character of the social political movements at that time, there was a candidate to the presidency, Salvador Allende, who wanted to make not a revolution, but to go a little deep in democracy, to make the country more democratic. And we were enthusiastic about his character and about his project, and we supported him as a young people with enthusiasm. Why? Because it was a fight for justice, for better conditions for the people of my country. But at the same time, he was promising a kind of reforms or a soft revolution in the frame of all kinds of freedoms in the frame of a constitution. That was very attractive to us who didn't feel very well about authoritarianism and dictatorships as some other countries like Soviet Union or all this Ost Bloc.
Workers were central to supporting Salvador Allende's historic campaign. They considered him to be El Compañero Presidente, an affectionate nickname that displays the Chilean working class's bond with his candidacy. In the following interview, WPFW Washington, D.C. reporter Paz Cohen spoke with an anonymous worker in the days after the 1973 military coup about the working conditions of his factory before the Allende presidency. Many outspoken critics of the U.S.-backed coup in Chile, led by Augusto Pinochet, chose not to reveal their identity.
When I first walked into that place, I wondered what sort of snake pit I was walking into. Because there's an old adage, you know, divide to conquer, and the German boss who owned this place, he owned several places, had done that very effectively. You know, in Chile you have a very fine division between what they call unemployed people and workers. Huh? The employed people are the administrators, and certain professions which are considered more manual professions, which are considered more specialized, huh? And these people have their own trade union, they have their own social security system, huh? And in our factory, there's even a division between the employed people. You had the administrative employed people and the productive employed people. Each one had their different trade union, you know, and they're all going against one another.
And the benefits were different, too.
The benefits were different, too. For instance, you had a certain scholarity benefits, you know, a certain family aid. And these are all things which, they weren't products of Frei's government. It was an interior government, Alessandri. But all that sort of thing, you know, was helped the bosses to divide the people, you know, creating within the working class even certain social differences, huh? And then there was the employed people and the workers. The workers are other types of social benefits, usually inferior, huh? And even among the workers, there was a whole sort of bonus system, huh? Which favored certain sections. And that gave to everyone, you know, the chance to envy certain and despise others. So yeah, it's a whole sort of system, you know. You divide people, you know, pit them against one another to prevent them from seeing what they have in common and struggling to better what they have in common. Because there too, there's a whole law code, huh, which is in favor of which is against the workers. You know, there are 100 different ways of firing a worker without paying him a dime.
Allende faced many challenges when the CIA began funneling millions of dollars into media opposed to his Unidad Popular campaign. But Allende's efforts resonated with a large grassroots population that extended to the artistic community. The new Chilean song movement, or Nueva Canción, emerged as folk singers incorporated leftist lyrics with traditional Andean instruments. Joan Jara, widow of the legendary Chilean folk singer Victor Jara, speaks about the movement her husband helped build. The following excerpt is from the program I Don't Sing for Adulation, the music of Victor Jara, produced by Francis Emily.
The next song is called Canto Libre. That means free song. It was one of his first experiments in the use of folk instruments, the indigenous Chilean and Andean instruments that are now banned in Chile. The new Chilean music, of which Victor was an exponent, they not only started to put new words to their songs, but also they started to recognize, to use, to develop the sounds that are native to Latin America. Conventional new folklore composers had used guitar, harp, the folk instruments that belonged rather to the farm owner class. And now the composers were digging much deeper and using the instruments that belonged to the indigenous people. These drums, an Araucanian instrument, which is really very like a Jew's harp, I think it's called, is it? One you use in your mouth. This is typical of the Araucanian Indians, Mapuche. Then there are the instruments of what are called the altiplano, that means the north of Chile, the high plains of Latin America, instruments like the quena, which I believe it roughly translates, you call them panpipes, or zampoño, which are, I don't even know if they're known here, they're a bunch of pipes together and you blow into them. the charango, which is a little instrument made out of the back of an armadillo. It has the hairs on it. These are all very typical instruments of the old Indian races of Latin America. They're wonderfully exciting sounds, too. There was an enormous upsurging in the use of these instruments and experiments with these instruments. And also, I think, Canto Libre was just that. It's a whole bit where the group just improvises together. And now, these instruments that were so important because people heard them and began to love them for the first time, they are identified with a popular movement. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the junta now has abolished all these groups. They're either refugees outside Chile. Some people who belong to them have been killed. Some are in prison. And this music that they played is so identified with the popular movement that now people only play the folklore of the upper classes, which is the rich farm owner. This is the folklore that is now being cultivated again by the junta, which they consider they are re-establishing the real values. My words are a dove looking for a place to nest, exploding, spreading its wings to fly and fly and fly. My song is a free song. It wants to give itself to anyone who holds out a hand, to anyone who wants to shoot. My song is a chain without beginning or end, and in every link you'll find the song of all the other people. Let's go on singing together to everyone on earth. Sing that the song is a dove, flying, reaching out, exploding, spreading its wings to fly and fly and fly. Victor said, when this record was published, that you can't be dogmatic about folklore. I think it was criticized because some people considered, well, this is not folklore. This, for Victor, is a transitory period, and he considered fundamentally that folklore was alive, that it was developing, that anyone had the right to say something new with folklore, to discover new forms, and to make it contemporary, because he felt it's a living thing, that it doesn't belong to museums, it belongs to the people, they have the right to develop us as they wish. And that's why it's called Free Song.
El verso es una paloma que busca donde anidar. Está allá y abre sus alas para volar y volar. Se quiere regalar.
Mi canto es un canto libre.
A quien le estreche su mano, a quien quiera disparar.
Victor Jara performing his song Canto Libre. Jara, Chile's version of Bob Dylan, was tortured and murdered in the days following the 1973 coup. Salvador Allende's September electoral triumph was confirmed in Congress, and he was sworn in on November 3, 1970. Allende set forth on an ambitious first year in office. For example, copper, Chile's principal export, was nationalized. For the working class, El Compañero Presidente set out to reduce unemployment, increase workers' wages, and production. Again, we turn to Pacifica producer Paz Cohen of WPFW, who speaks with a Chilean factory worker about how conditions in his factory changed under the presidency of Salvador Allende.
The first measures which the state took once it took over the factory, was to practically cripple our wages. We were on starvation wages. Many times on Monday morning, I didn't have money to take bus fare. And well, the first thing the state did was to triple our wages, to give us decent living conditions, to improve the sanitary conditions there, to give us a canteen, things which we never dreamed of before, you know. And at the same time, a whole worker participation system was set into place, which gave us the possibility to give our opinion, to criticize, to propose, to invent. This sort of thing we went on perfecting during the 2.5 years we were in we were state property.
What became of what you were saying before, the divisions where certain workers had more benefits and that it was competitive?
Yeah. There we eliminated the three trade unions and we formed a single trade union. All the bonus system was made collective. Instead of pitting the guys one against the other, we all worked for a common bonus. At the same time, all the foremen, the administrative people, were submitted to exactly the same regime as the workers. For example, disciplinary problems go, we had a commission of discipline with members of the production committees, the trade unions, and the administration, and the social department. And there, even the boss could be, the administrator could be called to the discipline commission, and you submit to the same discipline as the workers. All that sort of thing. All the privileges were done away with, and at least in our factory anyway, one thing which really impressed me was the way the administrative people entered into this thing. They themselves often took initiative.
Towards the end of the relatively successful first year of Allende's governance, Cuban leader Fidel Castro came to Chile for a month-long visit. At a time when his Unidad Popular coalition showed increasingly positive results in municipal elections, Allende took the opportunity to display his commitment to complete what he called the people's mandate. The following is an excerpt of Allende's farewell speech to Fidel Castro, as preserved in the Pacifica Radio Archives.
I say this calmly. I am not made of the fabric of apostles or messiahs.
Yo no tengo pasta de apóstol, ni tengo pasta de mesías.
My disposition is not that of a martyr. I am a social fighter who fulfills a task, the task given me by the people. But let those who want to turn back the clock of history and ignore the will of the majority of the people, realize that even though I am not inclined to be a martyr, I shall not retreat a single step. They must realize that I will only leave La Moneda when I fulfill the people's mandate. Because it is the mandate that the people have given me. I have no other choice. Only by riddling me with bullets will they be able to keep me from fulfilling the program of the people.
Fidel Castro's presence in Chile had a galvanizing effect on the anti-Allende opposition. A year after Castro's departure, Salvador Allende addressed the United Nations Assembly. He warned against a coup accelerated by multinational corporations, causing economic destabilization, in an address to the United Nations Assembly.
I call to order the 2096th plenary meeting of the General Assembly. This morning, the Assembly will hear an address by the President of the Republic of Chile. I would request the Chief of Protocol to be good enough to escort His Excellency, Dr. Salvador Allende, into the Hall of the Assembly.
En junio último, de distintos aspectos.
The world was shocked in July to learn of different aspects of a new plan of action which the IT&T itself submitted to the United States government. Plans to overthrow my government within a period of 6 months. I have in my briefcase the document dated October 1971, which details the 18 points that made up this plan. It was proposed that there be a strangling of the economy, a sabotage of our diplomatic position, sowing social disorder and panic among the population, so that when the government was overthrown, the armed forces would be impelled to break the democratic system and impose a dictatorship. Gentlemen, before the conscience of the world, I accuse the IT&T of attempting to bring about civil war in my country, the greatest possible source of disintegration of a country. This is what we term imperialist intervention.
Lo que nosotros calificamos como intervención imperialista. Cientos de miles y miles de chilenos.
There are hundreds of thousands of Chileans who wished me Godspeed with fervor and warmth when I left my country, and they gave me the message that I have offered this World Assembly. I am convinced that you, representing the nations of the world, will understand and assess my words. In our faith in ourselves, what increases our confidence in the great values of humanity is that, and the awareness and confidence that those great values will prevail. They cannot be destroyed.
No podrán ser destruidos.
Despierto, cuando se muere la carne, el alma busca su centro en el brillo de una rosa o de un pececito nuevo.
Popular artists in the Nueva Canción movement answered the call of their craft to warn the people of Chile against the dangers of a fascist coup. Joan Jara speaks about her husband Victor Jara's efforts in this regard, followed by his song I Don't Want My Country Divided.
I think all these composers, actresses, all the Chilean artists during those months, I think put all their efforts to express their desire for peace, to express their desire to go on working, to express their desire that there should not be violence and civil war in Chile. They were answering Pablo Neruda, who at the beginning of that year sent out an appeal to all the artists of the world to help the Chilean people with their poems, with their songs, so that they should be allowed to go on to decide their own destiny. In this process, Victor was very much engaged. He produced programs in the television where many artists came together and some recited poems, made music, or danced for peace against fascism. Victor, as the theme of this program, put music to one of Pablo Neruda's last poems. He says that I am staying here to sing in this new history and geography.
I don't want my land divided, or seven knives to leave it bloodied. I want the light of Chile hoisted above the house we've just constructed. I don't want my land divided, or seven knives to leave it blooded. I don't want my land divided. There's room for us all here in my country. And those who feel that they're in prison should go a long way off to play their tune. The rich have always been foreigners. They should go to Miami to join their aunties. I don't want my land divided. Let them go somewhere else to play their tune. I don't want my land divided. There's room for all of us here in my country. I'm going to stay here to sing with the workers of this new history and new geography. I'm going to stay here to sing with the workers of this new history and new geography.
Patria dividida, ni por siete cuchillos desangrada. Quiero la luz de Chile enarbolada sobre la nueva casa construida. Yo no quiero la patria dividida ni por siete cuchillos desangrada. Yo no quiero la patria dividida, cabemos todos en la tierra mía. Y que los que se creen prisioneros se vayan lejos con su melodía. Siempre los ricos fueron extranjeros, que se vayan a Miami con sus tías. Yo no quiero la patria dividida. Se vayan lejos con su melodía. Yo no quiero la patria dividida, cabemos todos en la tierra mía. Yo me quedo a cantar con los obreros en esta nueva historia y geografía. Yo me quedo a cantar con los obreros en esta nueva historia y geografía. En esta nueva historia y geografía.